Jeremiah 18, we'll read about, we'll start reading at verse 3. Then I went down to the potter's house, and behold, he wrought a work on the wheels, and the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again, another vessel, as seemed good to the potter to make it. We've looked at several different things about the potter knows the clay, and dealing with primarily the clay must be removed and refined and reformed and rotated and responsive. This evening I have another word that's sort of unusual, I suppose, when we hear it to begin with, but it's exactly what I'm trying to say, and that is that the clay must be rigid. When the potter finally gets the vessel formed, and it's formed as he wants it, if it's a jar, you can look at it and say, there's a jar. If it's a vase, you can look at it in the form as a vase. He has the form completed, and if you think about it, it looks as though he would hurry and finish the vessel. We certainly know that he's going to have to get it in the kiln or to put it in the furnace to fire it. And it seems to us that the first thing he'd do is rush from the wheel, stick it in the kiln and fire that thing and get it. I mean, after all, he's making a vessel to use it. He's making a vessel for someone. And he certainly, I believe, is anxious to get that vessel complete and to get it to where it should be and to be used as he desires. But there's one step, I guess to us, would seem somewhat unnecessary. It seems as though it wouldn't be important. But if we understand the facts, and we'll look at some of those tonight, we'll realize that it is very important. It is very necessary. It cannot be sidestepped. The clay must be rigid. I mean by that, the word rigid means not pliable. Now, think about that. Up to this point, if there's anything the potter wanted the clay to be, it was pliable. He wanted the clay to be soft. He wanted to be able to maneuver and to manipulate the clay, and he had to have it pliable or soft. And now that's the last thing he wants. He wants it to be rigid. He needs for it to be rigid. The word rigid means to not be flexible. You see, the reason that he needs it to be rigid and firm is because it's about to go out into the world. Now, while it's on his wheel, while he's working on it, he needs it soft and pliable. He needs it, as we've already mentioned, to be responsive to his touch. But boy, when that vessel gets out in the world, it's going to be completely different. For there's going to be people handling the vessel. There's going to be people using the vessel. There's going to be people misusing the vessel. And if it gets out there in that world, it's soft and pliable. If it is not rigid, if it is not firm and hard, oh, the world will destroy it. It won't last any time at all. So the potter knows that this vessel, this clay, must become rigid. The word rigid not only means not flexible, but it also means not bending or not easily moved. And boy, I'll tell you what, if he just set that vessel off the wheel and stuck it in his window and sold it, it wouldn't take any time at all for that person who bought the vessel to mar it and to misshape it. It would be marred and misshapen because of the abuse and because of the use. And the potter knows that's not going to be the right thing. He doesn't want that to happen. He doesn't want a vessel that's going to be easily moved or manipulated. And there's some things that we need to be rigid about. There's some things that we need to be very careful about. One thing's for certain, if we aren't careful, this world will mold us into its image. If we're soft and if we're pliable, if we're tender toward the worldly things, we will become worldly. So we need to have this work done on us that we'll mention tonight. We need to be firm and we need to stand. That word rigid means unwilling to move. And that's how it needs to be. There's some things that we need to be steadfast in. There's some things, I'll use the word, we need to be rigid about. We don't need to bend about what we believe about the Bible. There's no place to be flexible about it. We don't need to bend when we talk about the fundamentals of Scripture, like the inspiration of Scripture and the blood-bought salvation and the cross of Calvary and the resurrection. There is no place to be flexible. There is no place to be shapen by the world's opinion. We need to be rigid. And therefore, the Lord knows that. The potter knows that. So he makes this step. He does this work, this process that we're talking about tonight, to make the vessel rigid. Now, I will need to say this. We can be rigid in the wrong way. We can be so firm and dogmatic that we think I'm the only one that's right and everybody else is wrong, and I don't think that pleases God. I don't believe that's His desire or His will. I don't think if we have the opinion that I'm the only one right with God, I believe that sort of displeases Him. In fact, I'm sure of it. So when I speak of being rigid and not being pliable or not giving in, I'm talking about the fundamentals. I'm talking about the standards, the things that please God, pleases God. But let me get to the message. There's one way, let me rephrase that. There's one right way that vessel, that clay can become rigid. Now later on it's going to go to the keel, there's no doubt about that. And there has that hardening effect there, but that's not what I'm talking about. There's a process between the wheel and the fire. There's a process between the wheel and the keel that is very important. And that's what we're discussing tonight. And that's where this process of becoming rigid comes from. And here's a simple process. Here's a simple thing. The clay has to dry. The clay has to dry. It has to dry totally. It has to dry completely. But it also has to dry slowly. You can't put it in a furnace and heat it and dry it up, dry it out quickly, because it'll make it fragile. It'll even make it break. This drying process must be something that's slow and gradual. It's something that must be complete. And since it must be complete and it must be thorough and it must be slow, it takes time. So the potter, once he molds the clay into the shape he wants, once he gets that vase to look like a vase or that lump to look like a jar, he takes that vessel off the wheel. And he walks over to a special part of his place in his shop, and he puts that shape, he puts that clay, he puts that vessel on a shelf. And he turns and walks away. And he leaves that vessel on the shelf to dry. He leaves it there for this process that's needed. He leaves it there because this process cannot be ignored or sidestepped. It must take place. He leaves it there to dry because only through drying can it become rigid. Only through drying can it become hard like it needs to be if it's to face the world it's about to go into. And there's the vessel. There's the clay sitting on the shelf. You know what it's doing? Nothing. It's sitting and it's waiting. It's waiting on the potter. Its only hope is the potter does something to further the work. His only hope is that the potter knows what he's doing. So the clay sits on the shelf and it waits. And that's what we're talking about tonight. The drying process that makes the clay rigid. The potter leaves the clay, turns and walks away. And the clay is at the mercy of the potter. The clay must wait. The clay must sit. Waiting isn't easy. Because if we can personalize this like I've done before, the clay wants to become a vessel. The clay wants to be used. That lump of clay wants to be formed and made and finished and used to where he can bring honor to the potter who made it. And sitting on a shelf seems like none of that's happening. Sitting there in the darkness, sitting there in the silence, it seems like none of that's happening. So could it say it like this? The clay may be a little bit anxious, but it doesn't help a bit. It doesn't hurry the potter along, for this process must be complete. It doesn't speed the process up one bit for him to be anxious. In fact, it probably makes it seem to be worse and longer. The waiting process, the drying process to make the clay rigid that it needs to be. Waiting isn't easy. It's the last thing the lump wants to do. It's a time when there's many questions and few answers. Could I personalize it again? I can almost see that vessel sitting on that shelf and it's sitting there doing nothing. It seems like it's not being used. It seems like nothing's being done. It seems like it's just sitting there doing nothing. And right across the room, the potter's working on another lump. And he's forming it and he's shaping it. And the wheels are turning and all the changes are made. And what a wonder it is. And there he sits on the shelf and he looks across the room and he says, "Why has he left me? Is he angry at me? Have I done something wrong?" Oh, but the answer is no. The potter's not angry at him. The potter has not forsaken him. He does not have the answer forthcoming. He does not see it as clearly right now as he will later on, because now it seems like I'm sitting here forsaken. It seems like the potter has forgotten me. He's left me alone, and right across the room, he's working with another lump. And I see what he's doing, and I can tell the great wonder he's doing on the other lump, and here I am doing nothing. Here I am accomplishing nothing. What in the world has happened? Is he angry? He did do something wrong, and he won't tell me. It's a difficult time for the lump. It's a difficult time for the vessel, because he doesn't understand what the potter's doing. And maybe you've been there, where it seems like the Lord has set you on a shelf. Maybe it seems like that you desire has not yet come. Maybe you have a prayer request, and you've earnestly prayed, and you believe it to be God's will, and even though you've prayed, and you have searched your life, and you see nothing that displeases God, yet the answer has still not come. The prayer request has not yet been granted. And it seems as though he's not even hearing. It seems as though he's off somewhere doing business with somebody else. And you wonder, have you forsaken me? Do you not hear my prayer? So you wait. Oh, that's the sitting period. That's the waiting period. That's the drying period. Maybe you have lost loved ones you've been praying for. And you're earnestly burdened. You really are troubled. And you've prayed for them. And revival comes, and you think, maybe this time they'll get saved. And you even know they go to church, and you think, Lord, please save them tonight. And you hear about they went and went back home and didn't get saved. and you pray for them, you earnestly pray for them, and your heart is broken, and you're truly troubled, and yet you keep praying, and yet they're still not saved. It seems as though you're praying, but nothing's happening. Maybe it's yourself in a spiritual dry spell. All of us go through those times. When we feel so dry and we feel so dead and we can't feel or find God. And it is as though He set us on a dark shelf all alone and we wonder, Lord, what's going on? What in the world has happened? Where are You, God? Have You forsaken me? Did I do something to displease You? It's a drying time. It's a sitting time. It's a waiting time. It's a difficult time. But it's a needed time. It's a necessary time. Maybe you have a need, and it's a genuine need. It's not just a want. It's not just a selfish or sinful desire. It's a genuine need, and you have prayed, and yet God has not yet met that need. And you wonder, Lord, what has happened? Why have You not answered my prayer? Sometimes you try to pray, and it seems like it does no good. Sometimes you try to read, and it seems like the Lord doesn't speak to you. Sometimes you come to church, and it seems like you just as soon have stayed home because you got nothing when you came. Dry times, shelf times, waiting times. That's what the clay's going through. Can I say first that shelf that the potter has placed the vessel on is a special place. It's a special place. It's a place that He's prepared for a specific and special purpose. You see, all along as He was at the riverbank getting the clay, as He was bringing it and cleansing it and getting it right the consistency, and He's putting on the center of the wheel, and He's doing the work, and He was making the vessel and forming the form into what He wanted it to be, all that time He knew the shelf's waiting. It was a special place. It was a place that was according to His purpose and plan the whole time. The potter knew that vessel was going to end up on that shelf. It was not because of a flaw. The vessel, the clay, that lump is on the shelf, not because as He was being worked on that wheel, the potter found some flaw, some hard spot, some piece of stick or twig that he didn't know about. He was not set on the shelf because he had failed. He was not set aside because of some flaw or some failure. He had not resisted the potter's hand. The potter had not found a hard spot that resisted his work, and therefore the potter in disgust said, I have had it, and set the potter, the clay aside. That's not what this shelf's all about. It's a special place. It's a special place for this special process. He had not found a flaw or some failure in the clay. The clay had not rebelled. The clay had not resisted His work. It had done everything the potter asked. It had been pliable. It had been molded. It had been soft. It gave in. It had been responsive. And yet still He's on the shelf now. Why? It's a special place. The potter did not put the clay on the shelf because he found some flaw. It's not because of favoritism. He didn't find a lump he liked better. He didn't set the singing lump aside because there was a better group coming through town this week. He didn't set the preaching lump aside because the big preachers in the county this week. He didn't set the mercy-showing vessel aside or lump aside because there's somebody around with a better personality. He didn't find somebody he liked better. He didn't find a lump that he liked better, and that's why he set the lump or the clay aside. That's not why he's on the shelf. It's not because of a failure, and it's not because of favoritism. You may think that it is sometimes, because again, as that vessel sits on that shelf, he sees the potter working on another lump. He sees the changes and he sees the difference and he sees the magnificence of his work. As he's sitting there with nothing happening to him, he sees somebody else or sees something else, and he sees the potter doing great things, and he wonders, what did I do? Well, the answer in this case is nothing. It's a special place. It's a part of the work. It's a part of his process. The potter has not forsaken the clay. The potter has not forgotten the clay. The drying process is necessary. The drying process is needed and important. It's a part of the process that he had planned on the whole time. And the amazing thing about it is, even though that lump, that piece of clay, that vessel did not detect it so much, the potter is still working on him. Oh, he may not be in there with both hands. He may not be in there sprinkling a lot of water. He may not be in there with the whirling of the wheels, but the potter is still working. This is a special place. And the potter, even though he is, humanly speaking, at distance, he's still working. Because this drying process is needed, and it's a process that the potter will accomplish or else. You see, even though he's not on the wheel, there's still, the potter places that vessel on the shelf in such a manner where it's touching nothing. So if you will, there's air circulating on every side. And we can liken that to the Holy Spirit working on us, even though we do not detect it all the time. It's not always a storm. The Holy Spirit that changes our lives or shows that he's working on us. Sometimes it's the still small voice. Sometimes it's a gentle breeze. But it is a process that's working. It is a process of the potter. It's a process that's needed, and just as much God. The Holy Spirit, even though he cannot detect it, is still working. The clay may not understand, but it must dry. It must dry thoroughly. It must dry slowly, and it will or else. For if that potter gets in a hurry, if that clay does not dry out thoroughly and completely and what they term it to be bone dry, when that potter puts the vessel in the keel, it will heat up and the moisture that's still inside the clay will turn to steam and the vessel will explode. This drying process is necessary. It's needed. It's difficult, but it's needed. It's a special place. That shelf is a special place. That shelf is a solitude place. When the potter takes that vessel, that lump, and he sets it on the shelf, he sets it very carefully. Or there may be other vessels sitting there already in the process of drying. He's already formed, he's already made, he's already in the process of working on other vessels. But when he takes this one vessel, when he takes you or me, he's very careful to put that vessel exactly on a shelf as he desires. It's not touching any other vessel. It is not touching any other vessel. If it does, the drying process will be hindered or altered. And that can't happen if the vessel's ever to be used. So that potter is very careful in placing the vessel, placing the clay at a very separate or solitude place. Well, to begin with, he built the shelf in a solitude place. In his shop, he does not build this shelf directly beside the door where everybody's going by as people enter or leave. This is not a display shelf. He did not put it to where everybody can go and look and awe and try to touch and try to observe closely. That's not what this is about. This is a shelf that's back in the back of the shop, over in the corner, in the dark area of the shop, where nobody else goes, nobody else is allowed. He knows if he puts that shelf up there where there's a lot of traffic, somebody will be bumping into it. Somebody will be reaching up and touching the vessel, that clay. So he puts it in a solitude place, and even more than that, he places that piece of clay, that vessel, in a place where it's touching nothing. And there's times where we go through solitude times, where it seems like you're all alone. Have you ever felt all alone, even in a crowded room? You can come to church and feel like there's nobody here but you. People can call you on the phone to try to encourage you, and it even though you appreciate it, it just doesn't seem to help. People can send you a card. And by the way, I'm not discouraging doing any of these. I think you ought to. But sometimes, even though a card can usually mean so much, sometimes it's just you read it and you set it aside. It just doesn't touch you. There are these times of the solitude experience where it seems like we're all alone. Where it seems like nothing helps. And that's part of the process that the potter sends us through. This shelf is a special place and a solitude place. It's also a silent place. Again, this shelf is not in the center of the room where there's a lot of activity, a lot of noise. It's not where people are coming in and out and they can watch it and you can hear the footsteps and feel the floor shake and people are bumping into the shelf. It's at a silent place. It's a place where it's quiet. It's back into the corner. It's back against the back wall. It's a place where it's quiet. And can I humanize this again? The clay thinks. I remember the whirl of the wheel. I remember when there was activity all around me. I remember when I was in his hands and he was moving and pressing and pulling. I could hear the wheel. I could hear him working. I remember there was activity in my life. I remember when the potter was doing something and I knew he was doing something. Now I wonder, where in the world is the potter at? All is silent. All is quiet. And if I could say it like this, the potter longs for the whirl of the wheel. He longs for the change. He longs for the potter to work in an active way. And all it is silence. Deafening silence. And he wonders, has the potter forgotten me? Has the potter gotten mad at me? And the clay longs for the potter's touch. He longs for him to feel him again. Even if he presses hard. I remember when he pressed the heart, it hurt. I'd even take that more than not feeling him at all. I long for his touch. I long for his voice. I long to feel him. I want the activity back. But all he hears is silence. Doesn't even seem to sense his presence. Can't hear anything. Have you ever gotten to the point where you couldn't even hear from heaven? Seemed like you couldn't find God, wonder where he was. And the clay had such high hopes. The clay wanted to be a vessel to bring honor to the potter. The clay wanted to be a vessel that could be used and be a help to somebody somehow. And now it's sitting on the ship. Can't even hear anything. Everything's quiet. Everything's dark. Everything seems distant. And it seems to him he's not only not bringing honor to the potter, it almost seems to him like it's a dishonor to be hidden away in this corner. But he doesn't understand what the potter's doing. It's a process that's needed. It's a process that cannot be sidestepped. He longs for the hustle and bustle of the wheel, but he's sitting silently, seemingly all alone. This shelf is a special place. This shelf is a solitude place. This shelf is a silent place. Could I say also, this shelf is a safe place? You see, the potter knows the clay. That's what I'm preaching on. He knows the clay. And he knows how fragile the clay is. I mean, when he first finishes the form, it is soft, pliable clay. And he knows if he's not very careful, that form will be lost. That clay will be marred. So he carefully picks up that clay and carries it over there to that shelf and very, very, very carefully, tenderly places that vessel on the shelf. He's very careful because he knows the clay is soft and easily damaged. But even in the drying process, the drier it gets, the more fragile it becomes. I mean, it becomes so fragile. It becomes so breakable that if somebody did just bump against the shelf, if somebody did just reach out and touch it, it would shatter. So this shelf isn't a place that's safe, like I've said. He's been careful to place the shelf where he did. He's even careful in building the shelf. He builds the shelf where there's way more stability with the shelf than will ever be needed by any piece of clay or any vessel he ever sets on it. It is stable. It is secure. It'll hold more weight than he'll ever make and put on it. It's a safe place. It's a stable place. It's a place where the clay can be feel safe and protected, even though he doesn't understand. Again, when it dries, it gets even more fragile. And the slightest jar would shatter it. It's a blessing to me to know that when we feel most fragile, that's when he's more protective of us. When we feel like we have no strength, that's when he gives us stability. When we feel like we're all alone, if we'll really look, that's when he's doing the greatest work on us. It's a safe place. Now I come to this conclusion. What do you do while nothing's happening? I mean, that vessel's sitting on a shelf and nothing seems to be going on. The movement that he knows about's across the room. Anything involved with the potter seems like it's a long way off involving somebody else, another vessel, another lump, another piece of clay. Nothing seems to be going on in his experience. So what do you do when it seems like nothing's happening? So let's close by saying this. What does the clay do during this process? During this drying process, what does the clay do? Now, I summarized it earlier by saying it can't do anything but sit and wait. I'll expound just a little bit on that. It is the work of the potter. It is the work that he has, and it will not be hurried. It can be lengthened. It will not be hurried, and therefore, the clay must give in to the potter's work. What do we do when we go through a dry time? What do we do when we feel like God's forsaken us? What do we do when we feel like I can't even find God? I don't even know where he is. Why didn't he answer my prayer? Why didn't he meet in this need? Why isn't he changing things? What do we do? Well, let me say quickly. We need to expect. Expect these times to come. It's a process that cannot be avoided. If the potter ignores this step, that vessel will never be used. And these dry times, these difficult times, these scary times, these silent times, these solitude times, this sitting time, it's something that's needed. It cannot be avoided. Don't be surprised when it happens. And don't let it get to you. Don't let it get to you, because when it comes, it's not easy. We need to expect. We need to examine. Now, everything I preached about tonight has not dealt with clay that resists at all. But if we do resist the potter, if we do fight against his work, we just will expect problems. Remember, Israel was in the wilderness. God led them to the wilderness. His desire was to lead them to the wilderness and through the wilderness into the promised land. That was what he was doing. But they rebelled, they wouldn't believe, and they wouldn't obey. So instead of being led to the wilderness and through the wilderness, they were led around the wilderness for 40 years. So when we're going through dry times, we need to examine ourselves and say, Lord, is this my fault? Have I resisted you? Have I ignored you? Have I obeyed you? Am I where you'd want me to be? We need to examine ourselves. One thing's for certain, if you remember, Israel never got out of the wilderness until they obeyed God. They wandered until they finally obeyed. And we'll wander around, or we'll sit on that shelf, I guess I should say, until we realize I better listen to the potter. It's a place we need to examine. We need to expect, we need to examine, and then lastly, we need to endure. It's a process that won't be ignored. It's a process that will not be sidestep. It's a process every one of us will go through. Somehow in our lives, maybe sometimes in your ministry, sometimes in your personal life, however, it's a time that we will face. And what we must do while we're going through it is endure it. It's a process that's temporary. I am not saying you just sit back and say, well, I can't get any help. Things will never improve. I just have to wait until God has mercy. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, listen, we endure the process and we obey God. For in the obeying helps us to get off the shelf. That drying process that's needed, that work that He's doing in our lives, will not be completed if we resist. But if we yield and surrender and obey and listen and help Him, let him help us through and listen to Him and obey Him, He can get us off the shelf through the dry time, through the silent time, through the difficult time. One thing's for certain. Any person God has used very much has gone through an experience like this. Moses went to the desert. Joseph went to prison. Paul went to jail. And each one of these were being conditioned for a ministry that God was about to open up for them, to where God used them mightily. I'll say it like this. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. That's what we've got to do. Wait on God. Wait patiently. Listen to Him and obey Him. The amount of time it takes to dry depends on the type of vessel He's made. You certainly know a little bitty jar will take less time than a large vase. So the type of vessel He's wanting to make out of us will be partially determinant about what He was wanting to do. When the potter knows that the clay has dried, you know what he does? He walks over there, picks it up, and carries it off the shelf. No problem for him at all. To us, when we get in that spot, when we get in that place, we think, how in the world can I get out? What in the world am I going to do? This is impossible. It's at a place where I can do nothing. I'm so far gone, even God can't help me. But listen, all the potter does is pick up the vessel and removes it from the shelf. An easy process. And that's why we must wait on Him and obey Him. Listen to Him day by day. Walk with Him and trust Him. He's the potter. We're the clay. And the potter knows the clay.